Welcome to another edition of Father Time. I'm very excited about today's show. I'm joined, as always, by my producer, Mr. Andy Lerner.
Good morning.
No kids yet, right?
Not that I know of.
You're still the voice of reason then. Our guest today, this is really fun because I've always been a fan of his work. He's a comic, but we've never met before, so this is kind of going to be a...
I don't think so. I don't think we ever did.
First time. You might know him from Crank Yankers. You're, of course, the host of The Metal Show. You have a new comedy special called A Simple Man out on iTunes. And of course, you're probably very well known for your podcast, Comedy Mental Midgets. My guest today, Mr. Jim Florentine.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. You're doing the rounds in Los Angeles. You're a New York guy.
Well, yeah, but my management's out here, my agent. So I come out here like once a month for like 4 or 5 days. I'll do some comedy sets, do some meetings, and, you know, whatever.
Get some sun.
Just mess around. Yeah, exactly. I'm in Jersey. I'm putting firewood in my fireplace. I got snow on the ground. I want to get out of that. I'm making lunches in the morning. I'm like, I got to, you know.
I got to get out of here.
Yeah, it's too much.
I didn't do the road when the kids were born, but now they're getting a 2 and 4, and I'm like, I got to get back on the road again. So yeah. I get a good night's sleep.
No, I know. Well, that's what you, especially when they're young. I mean, that's when you sleep is on the road.
Yeah.
You go on the road just to go to sleep so you can sleep in the hotel room.
I'd go on the road to party my ass off and try to have sex. And now I go on the road to just try to get some sleep.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about you. First of all, The Metal Show, Crank Yankers, all the stuff. I mean, it's an amazing body of work that you've been doing because The Metal Show went for like 25 years, I feel like.
Yeah, we were on for seven or eight years.
Yeah.
Did 130 episodes in 2008. It got canceled last year. So, yeah, I mean, you know, in TV life, that's phenomenal. Do 130 episodes.
That's the longest run of all. That's like Gunsmoke, The Metal Show.
Yeah.
Those are the two.
You're
a huge metal guy.
Yeah, you know, I grew up listening to hard rock and metal and then also making prank calls. Like, that was my whole childhood because I grew up strict Catholic. I was always grounded, so I would just...
You kind of brought that whole prank phone call thing because what was it, the Jerky Boys back in the day?
Yeah.
And then you had Crank Yankers. You kind of put it into a big show, and it was amazing. It was just puppets doing crazy phone calls.
Yeah, well, we'd do the phone calls, and they would recreate them with puppets. They'd build a whole set and do all of that and hire puppeteers to act it out and all that. So, so that was my whole childhood. So I basically got on two TV shows talking about heavy metal and making prank calls.
It's like, amazing.
Who would have thought?
Never.
That sitting in my room listening to AC/DC as a 12-year-old and making prank calls that I would, you know, be on two TV shows later on in my career.
That is a perfect segue. Let's go back to your childhood. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in New Jersey.
You're a Jersey kid.
Yeah.
Siblings?
Still live there. Seven of us. Total.
Seven.
Yeah.
Kids. You're not even Irish Catholic.
Four boys, three girls.
I thought he did mention being Catholic. No, you didn't?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was Irish. Irish and Italian.
Irish and Italian. The Florentine's the Italian.
Yeah.
We're the same with the Jersey.
It goes with the territory.
Yeah. Well, talk about your childhood. Seven kids. I'm the youngest of six, too, my father. That's the premise of this whole show is my father never told me anything of like how to shave, no sex talk, no here's how to take care of kids. He basically was a breadwinner. And then my mother ran the roost. So was your parents similar?
Yeah. My dad passed away when I was 28. He was 58 at the time. So I didn't have my first kid till I was 46.
Right.
So no, he never knew nothing about sex. I mean, if you grow up in a Catholic family, don't even talk about it. Like one time we were messing around with these girls in the pool. We were all grabbing each other, me and my friend and these two girls that we knew. And the parents came home. And they saw us and they told my dad, and my dad brought me in his room. I was like 14. He's like, you can't do that to women. You just can't grab them like that. I go, yeah, but we're just playing a game. He goes, no, you're not allowed to do that. You can't. I go, okay. And that was it. That was the only sex talk.
The sex talk was don't grab women.
Don't grab women.
Which,
at 14.
By the way, with our new president, apparently that's off the table.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm ahead of my time. I could be president one day.
You could.
Yeah.
They'd find a tape of you as a 14-year-old and be like, yeah, that was me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
But back in that day, he probably was like, part of him was like, yeah, don't grab women. And also, I'm really happy you're straight. Like,
yeah, I'm sure he was happy about that. And then my first girlfriend, I wound up using saran wrap on her as a condom. And she broke up with me and it got around the whole neighborhood. And he found out and he freaked out about that one. That was at like 18.
You know, we're not going to just let that nugget sit there, right?
That's fine. But yeah, so that was our only two sex talks, about anything.
I want to know where you got your information to back that
saran
up,
wrap.
The saran wrap thing.
Where I got my information, what?
The saran wrap was
well, you know, like it's my first girlfriend. I think it was like the third time I've ever having sex. I'm 18. I was a month before my 18th birthday, and we were at our parents' house. It was like 2 a.m. We're fooling around in the living room.
Sure.
And I didn't think anything was going to happen. You know, I'm prepared. You have no idea. And she's like, I go, let's do this. And she goes, well, we need a condom. I go, I don't have one. She goes, well, we can't do it without one. I go, hold on. I went in their kitchen. 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, apparently, like, there's going to be a, you know, a dispenser of condoms, like roll of paper towels there.
And I'm nowadays going, there should be.
And I'm, yeah, and I'm out of my mind. You know, when you first start having sex, you're like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Ever.
And I was a late bloomer.
Ever.
You know, being a virgin up till a month before my 18th birthday. And I was looking around and I found Saran wrap and I tried using that on her. And she didn't know because it was dark. And then she found out. She freaked out, threw me out at like 2 a.m. I walked home and then... She told everybody. She broke up with me the next day, and I was dating her for like 6 months. And then my father found out, and he freaked out.
I'm just glad you didn't find the aluminum foil first. That's all I can say.
Yeah, well,
some Tupperware.
That was an option. You know, it was the extra clingy.
How
if
does it
that
get
mattered.
Back to your dad? Like the town is that small where everyone goes, hey, did you hear the news?
Because we were boyfriend and girlfriend, we broke up, and then everybody was talking about it for some reason. I don't know. He just sat me down. He's like, you got to be kidding me. You use Saran wrap. I'm like, you know, what's I going to do?
Well, Dad, you didn't have any condoms in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you had 7 kids and you weren't wearing condoms. You didn't tell me about it. He didn't even say, look, if you're going to have sex, wear a condom. None of that stuff. There was no talk at all.
That's what my father, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom, nothing. Like, I think my oldest sister had her first period, my mom didn't even do anything. Like, she just had to ask her friends or something like that. I think.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I think my sister was telling me that
Isn't
later
that
on.
Isn't that weird? It's so crazy because I feel like nowadays with my kids, maybe it'll stop when they get older, but I tell them everything. Like,
same with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, we learn from our parents. Plus, they're going to learn it anyway, you know, somewhere. Yeah. They're going to, you know, they got iPads and they can...
Where in Jersey are you from?
Central Jersey. Central I grew up Jersey. In Oldbridge.
So just so like suburbia.
Yeah, suburbia, yeah.
Yeah, crazy kids. And what did your dad do for a living?
He was a chief financial officer at Dun & Bradstreet. So he had a big job. You know, 7 kids. He worked. My mom stayed home.
Did he
go
into the city every day?
Yeah, he took the bus into the city
really?
Every day. Yeah.
Wow.
And then he was also my baseball coach. We all played sports. He was my brother's baseball coach. Did, you know, all that stuff. Football. He was there all the time. You know, he
was
loved
he hard driving or was he casual guy?
Yeah, casual, yeah. But, you know, basically, you know, hey, listen to me. You know, I'm the boss and, you know, I make all the decisions. You know, that kind of guy. You're like, all right, cool. But, you know, he was always, whenever he had free time, he loved spending time with his kids.
That's pretty cool.
But that's tough, to, you know, for 7. You know, so I probably, looking back, I don't know. But, you know, as a comic, you probably didn't get enough attention. So that's why, you know, I would always act out. And that's why I probably became, you know, I went into the stand-up comedy field.
Most comics, there's something horrible in their life. I'm the same. I grew up in this great suburban neighborhood and just kind of had a weird outlook on stuff and became a comic. But most comics are like, oh, no, my childhood was a disaster.
No, I grew up in the neighborhood. I'm still friends with a lot of those guys that I've been friends with since kindergarten. First, I still hang out with them all the time. So I, you know, there was a lot of us. But other than that, I got put in Catholic school. I didn't like because all my friends were in public school and my parents thought it was a better education if you're in a Catholic school. I'm like,
was it a better education?
No. No, you had priests teaching us math. You know what I mean? Like, what did they know about math? You know what I mean? They're going to deduct how many kids they molested. You know, and is that how they're going to get to their math problem?
There it is.
They know how to count.
I touched 6 kids, but only 4 told on me. So
that's
how I got to 2. You know, was that the common core?
If you touch 4 and only 2 rat you out, what's the new town that your parish will be sent?
Right.
Where will you be sent?
Bradford, and you never heard from him again.
Oh, no, he has his calling. It was his calling to go to North Dakota.
Yeah.
That's really funny. I did not. I kind of wanted to go to the private Catholic school, but I ended up going to like the biggest public school in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Right.
But I kind of, because I had a couple friends who ended up going and they had a better sports program and I kind of wanted to go. And my father was like, yeah, we don't have any money. You're not going to that.
Yeah. I mean, we all pretty much went to. So, you know. So
well, your parents, sounds like they were heavily religious.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Did you go to church every week?
Yeah. I went to church every Sunday. We'd have to go to church.
How'd that take? You still probably go every week, I'm guessing.
I haven't been probably 15 years.
Like funerals and not even Christmas, yeah?
No, not even Christmas. But, you know, it's weird because my son is 6 and he's in kindergarten. And next year he has to start like CCD, you know, where you learn about religion. It's like an hour after class. And I'm like, I don't even know if I want him to do it.
I don't either.
You know what I mean? It's because they have to go for 8 years. you know, once a week for 8 years during the school year. And I'm like, for what? You know, for what? I'm like, I could teach him what he needs to know in an hour.
I remember being like in those CCD classes and immediately being, they would tell some crazy story. And I'd be like, that sounds like bullshit.
Right.
Like, even as a kid, I remember the teacher going, this is the, and I go, that doesn't make any logical sense. And so we ended up moving before I got confirmed, so I never even got confirmed. And then I became godparent twice, where you're supposed to be confirmed, and I've broken a lot of rules in the church.
That stuff is all, I don't know.
My mom was religious. But
my mom is still goes to church all the time, so she's going to freak if I don't.
Yeah.
I remember when my ex was pregnant at the time, we announced it to my mom. I took her out to dinner, and I announced it. I said, and just to mess with her, I go, yeah, I think I'm going to raise the kid Muslim. And she just almost had a heart attack right
like
at the
like dropped
table.
Right then.
Yeah,
and then.
Yeah. I got him baptized. You know, she's like, you have to get him baptized. Yeah, so I found shady guy from some alternative just church.
Dunked him in a river.
He's
upside
like, look,
down.
You need to go like 3 or 4 times at least to our church. I go, look, I'm a comic.
It's not going
to
happen.
I'm not getting up Sunday morning. I'll go, here's an extra 100. Let's just throw some water on him. Let's get out of here.
That's what my father, I used to do a joke because that's what my father said. Like, I'm the youngest of 6, and they stopped going like right about when I was a kid. My father was like, I'm done with that. Because he worked 6 days a week. He's like, I'm not getting up on my one day off to go listen to some guy who only works one day a week, drinks wine while he works, and doesn't pay taxes. That
That's
guy
funny.
Can go straight to hell.
That's funny.
And so I kind of took that with me. And so he never went to church until he got really old.
Right.
And then he wanted to hedge his bets, I think. They're like, listen, just in case.
Yeah.
I better. That happens like in their 70s and 80s. They go, you know what? We better check in just to make sure we're still on the list somewhere.
Right, and just say, look, I'm sorry for the last 40 years I didn't go. And then you're like, all right, I'm all forgiven. This
That's
is
it.
Great.
It's you're in. You're in. Come on in. Get your e-ticket and go. What else about your childhood? Were you close with your siblings?
Yeah, we were all pretty close, all pretty much close in age. You know, they popped them out pretty much every year, maybe took a year off after 3. So we're all real close. We're still close. We all live 25 minutes from each other.
Yeah.
And
even as a comic, you never left Jersey. You weren't like, I'm going to move to the West Coast or live in the city. Or...
No, but I was right outside New York City, too, for a while. I was like in Fort Lee.
Sure.
So I lived there for about 15 years. And then when I got married and I had a kid, I'm like, all right, I got to move back to the suburbs. I lived in a high rise. I'm like, there's no kids that live here. And he needs a backyard. He needs to play. And now I live in a street where there's like 9 kids within 3 years of each other. Like, they're all pretty much the same age, and they hang out, and they come over to the house, and he's over there, so it's perfect for them.
And you're basically your dad. You commute into the city.
Yeah, it's like 45 minutes. It's no big deal.
And you're going against the grain of traffic because you're going in at night.
Yeah, going in at night if I have to. So you just pick the right times to go in. But I don't mind being in the car. You know, so it's like, you got to make a sacrifice for your kid. You know, you want him around. I had a bunch of friends growing up, so you want him around,
Were you a good kid? Were you in trouble?
No, I was bad. Always in trouble.
Yes, you seem as a metal. The host of the metal show definitely, I mean, you've been arrested once or twice.
No, never been arrested.
I guess it's just me then.
Never been arrested, but just always a troublemaker, just a ball breaker.
I've been arrested too. It's okay, Jamie. Don't feel bad.
Just the two of us, Andy?
What were you arrested for? DWI?
No, I never got a DWI. God damn it. Don't even say that. Knock on wood.
Well, that is Uber, so that's taking the fun away.
Yeah.
You know?
It's taking the fun away. Drunken disorderly. There was always, let's say there was alcohol involved in hijinks. In high school, I got arrested, and then they called my soccer coach to bail me out, I think, or something. And then in college, there was an issue or two. There was a barroom brawl at Crossroads in Back Bay in Boston, and apparently the cops came in swinging, and I was arrested for assault and battery on a police officer. He assaulted me, and then that's how they do it in Boston. They hit you, and then they arrest you to cover their own ass.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I didn't take a swing. I'm pretty sure I got swung on and then arrested.
But it shouldn't have been too bad. You were Catholic in Boston. You probably spent like 5 minutes.
Oh,
arrested.
No, they let me out immediately.
Yeah, well, one time I got a ticket for drinking in the car. We were just sitting in a parking lot. We were like probably 19 at the time.
Yeah.
We had beer in the car and you know, drinking in public, and we had to go to court. And I never forget, the cop's up there, and he's like telling the judge, I caught these guys, these three. It was me and my two friends, and they had a case of Coors Light in the car, and they were drinking. And I'm like, excuse me, can I just interrupt? I go, it was Budweiser. Because it was. I'm like, I don't drink Coors Light.
Yeah.
Come on. You drink Bud. You're from New Jersey. You drink Bud in a can.
That's what the judge wants to hear.
If I'm going to jail, I want the record to reflect
that
I do not drink this shit.
I can't have this on my record that I was drinking Coors Light shit beer. I was drinking Bud.
I would like the record to reflect that I have taste.
I got to whip the dirty look, and he's like, it doesn't matter. Well, you were drinking. You were drinking. I'm like, yeah, okay.
I mean, Budweiser's pretty American. But back in those days, Coors Light was, you couldn't even get it back east. Wasn't it like a bootlegging thing? Remember, it was in front. When I was a kid, Colorado, you couldn't get Coors out of Colorado. No, you couldn't cross a state line or something.
If somebody showed a case of Coors
back in my day, they would be like, people like, oh my God, he bought Coors.
Manna from heaven.
Yeah, it might have been Busch. He might have been Busch beer.
You remember Busch
Light? It might have been that where they had Bishop. And I said, no, it was Budweiser. I do remember interrupting them because that's what we drank, Bud cans.
That's
we had to
so
drink
funny.
Budweiser in a can.
Were you a big boozer?
Yeah. And well, I would just get a nice buzz on to talk to have the balls to talk to girls.
It was Liquid Courage. Yeah.
I did
the same.
That's all I did. Yeah. I was never a day drinker. I didn't want to drink all day. Friday and Saturday night, my friends would come over. We start drinking at like 6:00. At like 9:30, we're all primed. We go to the club to try to pick up girls. But we had some beers in us.
You got to have a couple.
Yeah, because when I was sober, like I didn't have sex like when I was sober for, you know, in all my 20s, I don't think.
Oh, I've never had sex sober. Has anyone ever had sex totally sober?
It was weird, right? Like you're like, no, there's always alcohol involved.
It has to be. I'm always like, I have friends who they would quit drinking or something. I'd be like, and they were single. I think when you're married, you could theoretically do it.
Yeah.
You could. But as a single person, like that first date, if you were going to try to have sex with somebody, it seems really uncomfortable. So
I know.
Yeah.
So it was always drinking involved.
It was just this odd moment where I was like, I'm inside you. This is uncomfortable. Yeah.
And plus, you can last longer, too.
The saran wrap didn't hold up?
It's very dry saran wrap, so, you know.
Well, that's what the Crisco's for.
I basically I didn't have any Crisco. I basically just broke the plane. It was like, you know, I had to go to the review booth. Nope, it's... Ball went over the plane, touchdown.
You're in?
Yeah,
but you said that was the third time you had had sex. You'd already had sex a couple times.
With her. We were both virgins when we first had sex.
Okay, so the first two times you actually had a condom.
Yeah, and this time I wasn't prepared.
You didn't
prepare. We were at her house at 2 in the morning. I didn't think anything was going to go down. I just wasn't used to carrying them.
To be fair, she did not get pregnant. So in reality, saran wrap in a pinch it works.
Absolutely. You know, so, you know, I didn't think it was a problem. Like, at that point. At that point, I'm like, I'll use anything. I don't care.
Of course.
I was crazed. I was out of my mind.
Back in those days, you would do anything.
Newspaper. Who cares? What anything in here?
I didn't even masturbate till I was 21 years old. Because growing up strict Catholic, I really thought I was going to go to hell. So I just blocked that out. I was into, like, sports.
I'm starting to understand where the comic side comes from a little bit
now. I
was
into sports, like pro wrestling and music. So that was just pretty much my distraction. We'd look at dirty magazines. You know, we go to garage sales and buy like Hustler and Playboy and
Penthouse.
And then we'd be in a tree fort, me and my buddies.
You'd have to hide them out in the backyard somewhere.
Yeah, we'd hide them. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we'd hide them. And then, there was no girls around. You know, our parents wouldn't let us have, you know, ego. My mom caught me one time with a Playboy magazine. Look, my dad would get a subscription to Playboy, which was weird. They were really Catholic. And we'd go look at it. And I remember looking at the garage and my mom caught me. She didn't talk to me for like 3 days. She goes, go to your room. And she was so mad. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. She caught me. I felt so bad. So, you know, it was a lot of feeling bad.
And it's so funny. That was like a Playboy. Nowadays, kids are online on a website where you're like, oh my God, it's like some crazy fetish.
Well, that's why you have to get into them, you know, young and just tell them, look, everything's out in the open with kids these days. You can't just hide and pretend that there's no sex and don't even talk
about
it.
So your parents were uber religious when you were
uber, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So
where do you fall in the seven?
Right in the middle.
You're right smack in the middle.
Yeah. So sex wasn't a big part of me growing up, so I acted out in other ways. I think if I was getting laid, I wouldn't have had a whole lot of aggression.
Well, that explains the metal a little bit.
Metal, yeah. My older brothers were into it, so they would drive around and were like 4 or 5 years older than me, and I'd be in the back seat, and they'd just be cranking, you know, AC/DC and Black Sabbath and all that stuff. So that's how I had no choice.
Yeah. Was your father, was he crazy about the music? Were you guys blasting metal in the house?
He didn't care. He liked 50s music. He turned us on to 50s. And I still like
50s
stuff to this day. Yeah,
Grease is great.
So we'd be in the backseat. He'd be playing the 50s. Listen to this. And we're like, oh, this is cool. But then we decided, you know, to get into hard rock and the metal. I do it with my son now. Like, I got him in the backseat. I know I'm got him trapped. So I got him in the whole hard rock and heavy metal. He's been to like 13 concerts already.
Did he go to Sabbath?
Oh, yeah. He already saw Sabbath. He already met Ozzy. Yeah. He's been to AC/DC twice. Yeah, he's great. He loves it.
But
I play Name That Tune with him. I got my iPod. I'm like, all right. I go, if you can name 8 out of 10 of these songs, we'll go to wherever he wants to go, like to go eat. And he'd be like, the Foo Fighters. I don't know what song it is. Yeah, it's great.
Are Foo Fighters heavy metal?
No, but he likes them. They get catchy songs. They got funny videos. Yeah. They're catchy songs.
They are catchy.
Yeah.
I like the Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters are great.
Yeah. What else about your childhood? Was there any crazy insanity stories or injuries or people getting the whole thing with the parent is like your father seems like the nicest dad ever.
He was nice, but there wasn't a lot of communication. Like he wasn't, he didn't talk about sex. As far as career, he was very supportive of me doing stand up, which is great. He wanted me to be an accountant.
That's not that common.
I know. Well,
were you always the funny kid?
Yeah, I was. I was like the one-liner guy. I wasn't a guy, you know, with the lampshade on his head. Those guys are never funny. Those guys are hacks. You know what they I mean? Like, it's the guy
Andy.
That's quiet. It's the guy that's
You've
quiet.
You just killed my career.
In the corner, that's just kind of just like, well, they're not great on stage. Like, they will never be great comics. I'm not saying I'm a great comic, but usually the guys that sit back and observe and crack one-liners, those are the guys that will be good comics.
Yeah, I mean, the lampshade on the head guy is the guy who's just regurgitating other people's jokes.
Right, yeah.
And bits. Yes. Like, I saw this bit on Laurel Hardy, and I'm going to...
So I was always doing that. I was like the one-liner funny guy. But my dad wanted to be an accountant because that's what he did, and, business and real estate and all that. And my brothers were into that stuff. And he paid for me to go to college, like a community college. He goes, start off at a community college, take an accounting, and then see what happens. After one semester, I go, I don't like this. I don't want to do it. He's like, what do you mean? I go, I don't want to do it. I go, there's another college, a community college, that does like radio and TV. I want to get into radio. I want to do some acting and just do TV and do all this other stuff. I'm into the music and I want to be on that side. He goes, okay, if that's what you want. I go, yeah, I do. And he's like, all right, fine. You go over there. And he let me go there. And then after that, I started DJing on the radio, like college radio, and did that. And then I got into stand-up. He was totally supportive. He goes, that's what you want to do. Go for it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And he came to my shows when I first started. Yeah. He's like, you were great. So he was totally supportive.
Well, he's also, he coached all your teams. So it seems like he would work all week, but then actually was interested in his kids.
Oh, he loved it. On the weekends, being a coach and stuff like that, and a manager of a baseball team. And then, I think he realized when I got this, I was pretty good at baseball. But then when I got to high school, it was a whole other level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So by the time I made like the JV team as a freshman. And by my sophomore year, I just wasn't that good. And I wound up quitting about halfway through. And I'm like, I'm never going to make it. And then once I started smoking pot and drinking beer, like you get into that, you don't care about sports anymore. There's a whole other world. I'm like, this is unbelievable.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I pretty much after I got, hanging around my friends, I'm like, I don't want to go to baseball practice.
I'm going
to
get high.
Yeah, because I wasn't, I just wasn't that good once I hit a good level.
Same. Once guys really started throwing curveballs, I was like, oh, I'm out.
Yeah.
Once they were throwing out my head and it would curve over the plate, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, in Little League, I was good.
Yeah, me too.
But then when I got to it was almost like a comic moving to New York or L.A.
And going, oh, I don't have a...
I live in Ohio. Yeah, I'm a king here. And then, holy shit, look at this competition I got here. Wait a minute, I got to go on after Louis C.K. and Dave Attell?
That happened to me.
And then you get exposed.
And you're like... Oh, wow. I really need to go write some new jokes. Yeah. I'm serious trouble.
Oh, man. This competition.
That's really funny. It is kind of true. That's so funny. So you were smoking pot and drinking beer.
Yeah. It's
Did your father know that you were off doing... But you weren't having sex. You were just smoking.
No, not having sex because, I was into heavy metal and wrestling. There's not a lot of girls that wanted to talk about, superstar Billy Graham or Judas Priest.
It's like a Rush show. There's just no women there.
Yeah, there's no women. But then when the 80s came, around 84 to, 88, 89, that was a good time because all those hair bands came out.
That's
and
right.
I had the long hair. I looked like Bon Jovi, whoever... had that look at that time, so I grew my hair out, and then I was cleaning up. It was great.
Yeah. So after the Saran wrap incident, you just made sure you had condoms with you.
Well, that and then my dad was always said be nice to women, treat women like I treat your mom. They had a great relationship and stuff like that. So that's what I thought. But then I would always go after. I was always the good friend. I was
really
guy. Yeah. Oh yeah. I was for a while. I was a good
the
friend.
Funny friend.
No, well, the good friend to women.
That's the worst position ever.
Oh, it was the worst.
That's terrible.
Yeah, so I had, there was like 10 girls I was juggling. Looking back.
But juggling, but not sexually. Juggling.
Not sexually, yeah. And they all had boyfriends and they were assholes. And I'd pick them up after they had a fight. I would take them to dinner.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I never was that dude.
I was.
Ever.
I thought I had a shot.
I was the guy they had the fight with.
See, I thought I can wear them down. That's, but meanwhile, the boyfriends didn't care because, like, good, that asshole's going to go pick her up at the airport.
Yeah, but we kind of...
I won't.
They do hate you a little bit because they always know you're waiting in the wings.
Of course.
They know, and the girl's always like, he's just a friend. And then you're always like, well, he's only there because he eventually wants to have sex with you. And the girl's like, no, he really cares. He doesn't care about you. No. He wants to have sex with you.
No, but then looking back, like, the bad mustache I had no shot. Like, I thought, like, I'm hanging out with nines and I was like a four. I'm like, you know.
You're not a four.
I didn't realize it though at the time. Seriously, like that, I was these girls were way out of my.
You're like
league.
A skanky metal dude.
This funny. This is a funny story. There was one girl I was madly in love with. She had a boyfriend for like 4 years. I work with her. Mm. She breaks up with the guy. So what I do, I decide, oh, this is perfect. She's going to start liking me. And, you know, when women, especially after a four-year relationship, they don't go right out and start having sex with guys. Guys will do that. Like, oh, cool, I'm single. I'm going to go start fucking girls. I'll go to the club, whatever it is. Girls don't. They need a time to, you know, to get over it, you know, have, you know, girls over crying, whine,
sure.
Watch Lifetime for friggin' 6 months, whatever. So me thinking, this is perfect. They're finally not together. And she was like 5 years older than me. I'm like 19 at the time. I sent her 24 roses to her house. Not even one. And this is when you couldn't get roses at the gas station or the supermarket. So they were like $60 for
which
a
is usually your first shopping.
You buy them on a street corner. The guy at the off-ramp selling
absolutely,
roses.
Absolutely.
Back in the day, you really had, you had to go look for roses at a floral store.
You had to go to a florist, and they were like $50 yep. for a dozen. At least, the minimum was $40.
It was a big deal back then.
It was a big deal. So I think I probably spent $90 yep. for 24 roses. And
this is the day after she broke up?
The day after. The day after, because I think, all right, I'm in.
The window's open.
Now we're gonna be a couple. And I remember we had like one like silly joke like a couple times. I called her my secret admirer or something like that. That was like, but it was like once or twice. So instead of writing, hey, to Jill, love Jim or whatever, hey, whatever, you know, thinking about you, I put from your secret admirer, thinking that she's gonna go, oh my God, you know. So now I'm
she's
waiting.
Gonna go. Oh my God, it's Jim.
Yeah.
You thought she'd know.
She know. So not I knew they were going to get delivered at like 5 o'clock at her house. I'm waiting by the phone. I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait. When's the phone? I'm checking it. I'm like, how come it's not ringing? I'm looking downstairs. I'm like, all right, there's a dial tone. Everybody stay off the phone. I'm like, stay off the phone. I'm waiting for a call because I'm thinking she's going to call me and go, come on over here and fuck me. You know what I mean?
Like, of that's course. How, like, that's oh how, my God, you're the one.
You're the one. That's how here clueless
we
go. I was.
Yeah. Tell move. This is like the end of the movie.
Yeah. So I'm like, this is unbelievable. I'm already dressed. I got cologne on. I'm like, I'm ready to go out the door.
That's awesome. Yeah. And
she never calls.
She never calls.
So I said, okay, well, maybe she wants to tell me in person. I guess she wants to tell me in person right. at work tomorrow.
Sure.
She doesn't want to do it over the phone. All right. Yeah. So I worked that out of my mind that it was okay. So the next day I go into work and I see her and she's like skipping down the aisle. Like we worked in this hardware store and I'm like, Jill, why are you so happy? She goes, oh my God, my ex-boyfriend Bill sent roses to my house. I can't believe he did that. That was so amazing of him. And she goes back upstairs in her office. She worked in the office. Now I tell everybody that work at the hardware store, I go, you got to tell her it was from you. I go, I'm not telling her. They go, you have to. She thinks it's from him. Because meanwhile, he's not returning calls. I guess she called him or whatever. He's probably thinking, what the fuck, roses? What are you talking about? So she doesn't know. She still thinks it's from him. So I had to go up in her office. I'll never forget this. And I sat down. I go, hey, Jill. I go, she's like, what? What? And she's got a big smile on her face. I can't believe this. This is so amazing. I go, you know those roses you said that Bill got you? She's like, yeah. I go, I got them for you. And she's like, yeah, right, Jim. You're always the comedian, always joking around. Ha, ha, ha. That's funny. I go, no, seriously. I go, I did. And she's not even looking at me. She's doing her pay. Wah-ha, whatever. I go, I can't believe he did that. That's amazing. I can't wait to talk. Oh, my God. I never, that's not like him. And then I go, the card said from your secret admirer.
Why would your ex-boyfriend say secret admirer?
I know. Right?
That
I don't
doesn't
know
even
why.
Make sense.
I know. So I said, the card says from your secret admirer. She looks up like this and just looks at me and starts crying.
I love that she started
so
crying.
So she had to break up with him all over again right in front of you.
Well, yeah. And just crying that like it wasn't Bill, it was you. You know what I mean?
She
like,
thought they were back together and they were not.
And they were not. And then they were from me.
Yeah.
A guy that, you know, she was probably 24. I was 19.
That's
like
crazy. So how does the story end? You guys just work in silence for the next 3 years at a hardware store?
No, I just, you know, just like, all right, well, she goes, look, I don't remember what she said, but basically it was just like, everyone's like, dude, you got no shot. What are you doing? You know what I mean? She's not going to, and you know, she's not just going to jump to you. And I couldn't understand it.
So she did not jump to you?
No. And then she's like, you know, my sister's single like 2 weeks later. You should hook up with her. And I'm like, I want you, not your sister.
Have you looked her up lately?
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
She's like in her late 50s now.
No, it's funny. I was telling that story at a club in New Jersey probably like 6 years ago because I did this as part of my one-man show. I did a one-man show. And I was telling this story on stage. And I haven't seen this woman in probably 25 years. And she stands up. She goes, Jim, it's me. In the audience, I had no idea. It was only like the third time I ever told that bit on stage. And she goes, it's me, Jill. And she walked out the stage. I'm like, holy shit. Ever this, and I brought her on stage. I go, is this a true story? She goes, yes. I go, did you think it was him? She goes, yes. She goes, absolutely. I go, what was that? She goes, I don't know what you were thinking. You were a nice guy, but you know what I mean? I was 5 years old. I was your older brother's age. It's right. Like, I wasn't gonna date a 19-year-old kid. And so it was funny that she was in the audience and stood up.
Did you have sex that night?
No, she's married with like 3 kids.
So
nah, I don't.
I'm joking.
No, but and you know what, and she's, you know, it wouldn't have worked.
No, of course not. You know. No, of course not. But you would, yeah, it would have been another notch on the belt, I guess. So you're in a hardware store. When did the stand-up start? When did you go, that's it. I'm taking these jokes and I'm going to go get on stage.
Well, I was doing radio. I was on the college station. And there was a little local station where I would do like 2 shifts at night from like 7 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Right.
And then they decided they wanted to make me the morning guy, like to be on 6 to 9 in the morning. They were paying me $100 a week. It was like a 100-watt station. Sure. But I was like, oh, this is great. Yeah. So I was on there, and I was getting up, but then I was just like, you know, I was cracking little jokes here and there in between the songs. Not trying to be like Howard Stern or anything, just, you know, being silly.
Sure.
And they were like, you can't say that. Don't do that. Don't tell any jokes. People just want to hear the music. I'm like, yeah, but what am I here for? I don't want to just play the music. No. Because I wanted to have a little personality. And then, you know, I started, you know, I was always a Pryor fan, Rodney Dangerfield fan, watching that stuff, you know. And then, you know, when Dice and Kinison started coming out and they were like, you know, like rock stars. And I wanted to play in a band. I was into the music. But, you know, Dice is playing Madison Square Garden. Right. He's got a leather jacket on. He's smoking a cigarette, telling dirty jokes. Kinison's up there playing with a band. And I'm like, this is pretty cool, man. I think I want to try comedy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it took me a couple of years to actually get on stage. And then once I got on stage, I'm like, that's it. That's what I want
to
do.
That's what happened to me. Where did you start? In New York?
No, I was on vacation in Florida with a girlfriend at the time. And we were driving from the airport. I saw open mic on Tuesday night, comedy night. I'm like, this is perfect. Because I had a bunch of stuff written, but I was afraid to go on stage. I was petrified.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, when I'm on vacation, when I'm on the beach with my girlfriend, I'm going to write some jokes and just keep writing and writing. And I saw it. I go, this is perfect. No one's going to know me. I could do it here where if I bomb, my friends aren't going to be like, oh, my God, that sucked. So I basically ruined the whole vacation because I was walking up and down the beach, you know, trying to memorize my routine. And she was miserable. And I went up there and I bombed. But I got one laugh. Somebody heckled me and I said something back. And that adrenaline I got from that laugh, from that crowd.
It's the drug of choice.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then the MC was like this local guy from New Jersey. He goes, dude, he goes, you're from New Jersey. He goes, you were funny up there. He goes, I like that, you know. He goes, I do a thing every Tuesday night at this place in, you know, 10 minutes from my house in Woodbridge, New Jersey. I host a comedy night. He goes, it's an open mic and we have like a headliner. Come on. He goes, come down. Come down every Tuesday if you want. I'm like, holy shit. So as soon as I got back, I started going up every Tuesday.
When did you start getting into the city and doing like the Cellar and stuff?
It took me like, I went in too early. I went in like 2 years. I was doing comedy like 2 years.
Everybody does that.
Because you think you're great.
You think you're great.
Because I'm playing in front of all my friends.
Yeah.
And they're loving it. And you know, and they think I'm the greatest.
I see people make tapes and then send it out and I go, that's the set you're sending out. You want people to see that? And they're like, yeah. I was like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It's always sketchy to start too early because they're never going to get a second first impression of you.
I know.
Thing you can do is destroy, and then show up and be like this killer.
I know. So, but you're greedy and you think, so I went in and then I got my ass kicked and I just went back to doing like shitty bars and one nighters. There was a bunch of guys.
Were you on a show with a bunch of big names and you just got destroyed?
You know, it was probably one of those bringer shows where you have to bring 10 or 15 people. Ugh. And then you don't do that well because your 10 or 15 friends saw that routine like 7 times. Right. And they're tired of it, you know. And then I was like, all right, man, you know what? Let me go back out. And, you know, a lot of headline comics at the time, a guy, Rich Voss, Bob Levy. There was another guy, Dennis. These guys like me for some reason. They took a liking to me, so they took me on the road. They already doing headlining. Yeah. So I got this guy. He'll do 10 minutes, pay him $50 or whatever. And I would just – so I was working a lot right off the bat. Plus, I had long hair, so girls would always want to come up to me after the show. So I would attract chicks. So they took me on the road just trying to get laid. Like they would come.
You told me earlier you were a four, and all of a sudden everything changed. Once your hair is long, you were like, "This is it."
No, I had short hair and a bad mustache. You know what I mean? And my buddy was, all my friends were in bands. Like, dude, you got to shave that mustache off. That's awful.
And grow your hair out.
He goes, I'm telling you.
And then you're a babe magnet.
And then all of a sudden, it was like, yeah, just turn like that. And then I started doing stand-up with the long hair. And these guys were like, oh, my God, look at these girls that are around. I'm like, come on the road. I remember, like, Rich Voss, I would bomb. I would get, like, one laugh in 10 minutes. Voss would go up there and kill for, like, an hour. And then after the show, there'd be, like, four hot chicks around me talking to me. Ha, ha, ha.
He must have loved that.
And Voss is just, like, looking, like, and they're not even paying attention to him. I remember one point he goes, did you see his set? That's what he said to the girls. Did you see his set?
Nobody cares.
They didn't care.
That's
really
funny.
They were like, oh, my
funny.
God, he was on stage and he's got long
hair. And plus, when he's headlining, you can be out kind of working the crowd.
That's exactly what I was doing. I was already working them, yeah.
Like, the feature's the best when you're just doing the 20 minutes before you're first starting out and the headliner's doing all the work and you just destroy for 20 and then go, I'll be at the bar, ladies. See you in a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
When did it really start to take off for you where you're like, all right, man, I'm arriving. This is coming together. Did you do a big festival in Montreal or all of a sudden you were like,
the comic strip was the first comic club I got in. And that was the only reason I got in that club is I knew how to play softball because I played baseball. So the comic strip had a softball team.
Yeah, I know.
And, the booker, Lucian Hull, that was his whole life. And they always sucked. They were like 2-13, 1-14. They never had a good team. So now all of a sudden, me and there's another comic from New Jersey, Eric McMahon, who played like, you know, minor league, whatever. He was great too. And we would just come into the city every night and we'd hang out at the comic strip. You had to hang out there.
Yeah.
But we were from New Jersey, so no one thought we were funny because it was a whole stigma. If you're from Jersey, you can't be funny. Well, I didn't wear a bad sports jacket and jeans and sneakers and tell monologue jokes and say how my parents are awful. You know what I mean? And I need to be in therapy. I didn't do that kind of act.
Right.
So that was what was you know, selling in New York City. So we would just hang out there.
Isn't it weird? There's just a certain style that's taking off, and everyone kind of tries to fit that mold as opposed to being themselves.
There was like eight guys in a row, guys in a row.
Sport coat.
You know,
it was a Seinfeld thing.
And just go up and tell like monologue jokes, like David. You know, there was a survey in the newspaper. 67% of women don't like, you know, when a guy masturbates, whatever. And that was come up with a punchline.
Yeah.
67%, blah, 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 blah.
I tried to be like that because I was a huge fan of Seinfeld.
Right.
And so my first couple times up, I tried to do that, and it wasn't for a long time before I figured out that's not how I'm funny. I tell autobiographical stories. They're just long stories about, and they're real stories. People are like, that didn't happen. You're like, it did. I'm not that good of a writer. That actually is exactly how it happened.
Yeah. So we hear that softball team starting up or whatever, and I said to Lucian, you know, like he would talk to me, but he just wouldn't put me on stage. Like, you wouldn't even acknowledge me as a comic. Like, we talk sports and all
that. And
you're
there
stuff.
Every night.
Yeah, I'm there three nights a week.
Yeah.
Hanging out. And then
who are the mainstays at that point? Who are the big juggernauts who every night are on?
Bolster.
Were there guys you looked up to like, oh, my God, one day?
Well, Louis C.K., Dave Attell, you know, at the time were coming in. They were the top comics in the city. Ray Romano.
Yeah.
You know, guys like that. So they were up at pretty much every night.
Yeah.
The lineup wasn't great. Like, I knew I could crack that lineup. Like, those guys obviously were stood out. Sure. But the other guys, I'm like, I could fit in with these guys, no problem. They just weren't giving me a shot. And I'm like, I'm just going to keep hanging, playing the game. So when the softball season starts, I said, hey, me and my friend Eric here, you know, we play softball. You know, I played softball because I would play it in Jersey. You grow up playing softball after you stop playing baseball. Right. You play in a league. And, you know, so he goes, oh, yeah? He goes, well, all right, we'll come down. Tomorrow's practice. And we went down there. And he's like, all right, you guys are on a team. And then, like, the first game, we beat the champions from the year before. I went 4-for-4. Eric McMahon went 4-for-5. You know,
like,
what I mean?
You want to set Saturday? You're on.
So then all of a sudden, he's like, oh, my God. Now he's like, oh, my God, these guys, you ought to see the swing. It's like, oh, my God, it's like you're Willie Mays and that catch he made.
And because of that, you became a regular at the
club. Well, because you couldn't – I was a ringer. Now we were ringers because you had to work at the club.
Right.
Like, you know, whatever team you were on. So now he's like – you know, now we're 3-0 and he's like going crazy. He's like the have, and he goes, all right, well, you know, you guys do need to work the club to be on the team. He goes, so let me see you. And you had to audition for him. Yeah. He'd watch you and then you would sit in his office and he would tell you, okay, you know, whatever. So he's like, well, I have to look at you guys. So I remember I did my set and then I sat down in the office and he was just shaking his head. He's like, he goes, I don't like your act. He's like, your jokes are very sophomoric. He goes, your jokes are like those kind of jokes where a bunch of guys are in a locker room and they nudge each other afterwards. He goes, but he goes, your voice should be heard in this club. He goes, and we got proms coming up, like the prom kids. Right. He goes, you'd be great for, you know, to make 16-year-olds laugh, basically, for the prom kids. He goes, and he goes, look at it this way. He goes, Sam Kinison and Andrew Dice Clay played here, and, you know, I'll give you the, you know, the last spot on Monday night, and, you know, we'll start from there. And then you can work the prom shows and whatever. And he goes, but so that's how I got in there because I played softball. Yeah. And then like a month later, I met this guy, Don Jameson, who was working at MTV at the time. And I said, I'm from New Jersey. And, you know, he didn't know I was a comic. He was booking the half hour. It wasn't half hour comedy. I was like Kamikaze or something like that. He goes, I'm looking for new acts. And he called up Lucian. He goes, I want to see this guy, Jim Florentine. And Lucian's like, okay. And he goes, well, I want, he was managing a bunch of guys. He goes, I want to put 7 of my guys on that show too. And he goes, all right, I don't care. I'll see everybody that night. I was the only one who got it. He loved all my jokes. And then I was like, you know, next thing you know, I was booking colleges and all that stuff. So that's how.
That's amazing.
Basically by hitting the softball.
That's really
like I
would have
never got past there. But all of a sudden they were, you know, and then I started working. I go, I'm at the comic show. All right, I'll come to the comic show and see you.
That's funny.
So it was all because of that, you know, baseball younger and stuff. And, you know, I knew how to hit a baseball. I would be, instead of writing jokes, I was at the batting cages every
and that's
day.
That's it. You're off and running. You're working comic. You end up doing crank anchors. And
yeah. Then I get, you know.
You used to do phone calls as a kid? You used to do prank phone calls?
Oh, yeah. Because I was always in trouble. So I was always grounded.
You see, we jumped that. Your father, did he ever hit you?
No, because he was at work. You know, mom was around.
That's
you know,
my mother, yeah.
He got home at like 6 o'clock, 6:30 off the bus.
She wasn't like, wait till your father gets home?
Well, she would. And she goes, you know what he did today? He did this. And my father's like, why did you do that? I'm like, I don't know.
Did you, were you recording
funny.
Them or were you just, you weren't recording
No, I wasn't
them.
Recording them. I would just make prank calls.
Like, who would you call?
Okay, so I call a neighbor across the street, which we didn't like. And I call a pizza place and order like 3 pizzas to his house. And I'd step at a window and wait for the guy to show up, and then there's an argument on the driveway, you know, arms full. I didn't order this.
That's such a dick maneuver.
I know, exactly.
We did the same in college. We ordered, like, Santos Gold and Cat Fancy magazine to our roommate. He kept getting shit, and finally he's like, guys, you're fucking my credit up. You really need to see. We ordered everything on TV. Anything we'd see, we'd order for the guy. And he fucked him up a little bit. He still, to this day, like, sends me text messages, you cock. Sending Cat
fans. Oh, yeah, we'd always do that. Like, my buddy was a huge New York Giant fan, like, football fan. He hated the Jets. So, of course, the Jets had, like, this little newspaper that came out every week called Jets Journal. So, of course, I sent it to his house. So he starts getting Jets Journal in the mail. He's like, what the fuck is this? Did you do this? I'm like, yeah. He's like, see, why? He, why?
That's
I'm like,
a
it's funny.
Prank.
Like, yeah, I'm like, it's funny.
That's a really clever prank. Were you guys before Jerky Boys, or were Jerky Boys?
No, Jerky Boys was before us.
But did you see them and go, holy shit, I've been doing that my whole life?
No, you know, I was never really into prank calls. Like, I just did them because I was bored. And then, you know, the Jerky Boys stuff was good. I was like, yeah, that's cool, whatever. But then as a comic, you know, I would have a show at like 10 o'clock at night. I didn't have a girlfriend. I was living up in North Jersey in this little shitty apartment. So I had nothing going on during the day. So if a telemarketer called, I would just try to see how long I could keep him on the phone.
That is it. I still do it to this day. If I'm in the car, I answer immediately.
Right. So and really I had nothing else. There was no, you know, my life wasn't busy. I would go to the gym and then I'd wait for my show at night. And then my buddy's like, dude, this is funny. You should start recording this stuff. So I started recording them. I put a little tape recorder on their phone or whatever. And then I put a CD out of these calls just to sell out my shows. Like, oh, maybe I'll get my name out there or whatever.
And did it blow up?
It blew up because my friends sent it in to Howard Stern, and Howard Stern started playing it. He's like, who the fuck is this guy? Holy shit, is this funny? And then I'm on the show like 2 weeks later. On the biggest radio show in history.
In history, yeah.
In history. And then all of a sudden, that, you know, Jim's going to be at the Funny Bone in Pittsburgh. I'm selling
out
4 shows.
That's awesome.
I know, but meanwhile, you know, I was already ready. I was already around for like 9 or 10 years.
You had the act.
So I was doing the B and C rooms. I was headlining, you know, the VFWs, the sports bars. So I had an act. So I was ready to do it. And I was featuring in the improvs and stuff like that. And then that happened. And then like a month later, after I'm on the Stern show, my manager's like, hey, Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla are on the Man Show, or look, they want you on this new show, this new prank phone call show, because that was their show. They heard your stuff on Howard Stern, and they want
so
you to
So they
be
had
on
the
there.
Idea separately to do the show, and then brought you
separately.
In.
It was like there was never a TV show in history of prank calls.
Right.
I get on Howard Stern, he starts playing his stuff a month later.
There's a show, yeah.
There's a show.
They heard it.
Yeah, they go, they want you on the show. They love your prank calls. I'm like, oh, all right.
Well, you're the reason that the show probably even was thought about to do it. They probably heard it on Stern, and then were like, hey, we should make a show about this.
Yeah, maybe. And, you know, Jimmy and I guess Adam would do prank calls or whatever. And they were, you know, they had the Man Show at the time, which is like the biggest show on Comedy Central. So they go, all right, we'll give you 6 episodes right off the bat. There wasn't even a pilot. They go, we'll give you 6 guaranteed episodes.
Yeah.
To me, I thought it was the dumbest idea in the world. I'm like, who's going to watch that?
It blew up. It was huge.
I know. I was already thinking all my comic friends are going to make fun of me that I'm on a puppet show. That's all I thought. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I go, you never know. And the thing just took off. So we're on for, you know, 4 seasons, I think we did. Yeah.
I used to think stuff like that too, like, oh, I can't do this. And now that I have kids, I'm like, yeah, what's that pay? Yeah, yeah, that sounds fine.
Absolutely.
Well, let's jump to that then, because your career took off. You do the metal show, you're a headlining comic, selling out A rooms, and Crank Yankers is taking off and stuff. Did you always want to settle down? Because you're like me, we're kind of late to the game.
My whole thing is I don't want to get married or have kids. I always thought I was going to hold back my career. I was always envious of Ray Romano, who was married and had twins and was, you know.
And still working. Like Gaffigan, I see all the time. Yeah, he's got 5 kids. And I'm always like, dude, where do you find the energy?
I know. And I'm like, how does he pull that off? That's so weird. Like how, because I just figured I'm going to have to move to the suburbs. I'm going to get a normal job, you know, because they would see guys that would start out and they meet a girl. Yeah, I'm getting married. Yeah, I got this insurance job. And I'm like, oh, fuck that. No way. I go, I just wanted to do stand. There's no way I don't want to live that life. So, and I was always like, how does Ray Romano pull it off? He's married with 2 kids and he's kicking ass and he's one of the funniest comics in the country. And then all of a sudden he gets his show.
Yep.
I'm like, how could he do both?
I don't know.
And you don't realize that. And then, you know, when I started going to therapy, like probably around like, well, I was like 38 years old. You know, I tell a guy, he's like, no, he goes, you don't understand. He goes, you have so much chaos in your life from these crazy girls or all the stuff, you know, on the road and this and that, that it's, you know, takes away from that. He goes, once you have that settled, you know, when you're married and you're in a good relationship, he goes, you can really focus on your work.
Yeah.
You got so much crazy shit going on there. You know, it's taking away from your work. He goes, that's how it works with marriage. He goes, look at all them people that are married and have kids and have great careers. I know. He goes, yeah, that's how they do it. They take all that other craziness
out
of their life.
It's an interesting point because I thought the same thing. I was like, I was so vision quested about what I was trying to do. But the truth is, once you kind of have kids, it makes it so much easier because when you're single, all you're thinking about is your career. And then all of a sudden you have a family and the career, you don't care as much about it. And you do better work. You're more grounded. You're home every night. It does help.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't see it when you're partying at your ass off. And
no, I know, because I had a friend that was married with 3 kids, and like, you know, once on a Saturday, he's like, "Yeah, I can't do gigs that Saturday night because my kids got a dance recital." I'm like, "What's more important?" I go, "I got a gig at a sports bar for you for $150." He goes, "Nah, I can't do it." I'm like, "I never want to be like that. I need to work every week. That's all. Why would you want to do that instead of doing stand-up?" So you don't even get it. And then as you get older, I'm like, you know, at some point, I'm like, yeah, I want to settle down and have a kid. I would have been a terrible dad in my 20s and 30s, without a doubt.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. I would have just ignored him.
Talk about where it finally changed, because you went through some stuff that happened where it kind of helped you figure out that you wanted to settle down.
Yeah, well, I had an ex-girlfriend for a while, and, you know, she passed away. You know, she committed suicide, and I just, at that point, I realized, all right, I gotta find a normal girl. I can't do this anymore. I always liked the wild, crazy one.
You were kind of drawn to the wounded lamb.
The wounded lamb, absolutely, because my mom took care of people. My mom was super religious. Like, there'd be people staying in our house, like my like aunts, uncles, anyone that got sick. Right. There was the neighbor down the street, the kid, you know, his mom went into a mental institute, so we took like 3 of their kids in our, so there was always kids in our house. My mom just took care of people. That was her thing. She took care of us.
And you always dated these types of women. You never, there wasn't one woman you can look back and go, God, she was strong in it. Because we're attracted to a certain breed that we can't judge, but it's, You always kept dating these women who needed help.
Needed help, and they were also like a little wild and crazy too, and I like that because I grew up so strict that I just couldn't wait to just go, you know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, I want that. The one that's dancing on top of the bar. I'm like, that's the one I want.
And now you're like, that's the crazy one.
Yeah, that's the one I want. And then, meanwhile, that's only fun for an hour. The other 23 hours of a day is a disaster.
Right.
That girl's a disaster. She's fun for an hour.
Really fun, though.
Okay, but when you wake up, she lost her keys. She can't find her license. You know, she didn't pay her parking tickets. You know, she's going to jail. You got to bail her out because she didn't. It's a nightmare.
Right.
But that 1 hour, and I was always that, you know, I was that dumb guy. I'm like, that's the one.
Yeah. They are fun. Those ones are. That's like when you first moved to LA and you date actresses.
Right.
For a while. Like, because we're crazy. I mean, I'm crazy.
Yeah. No, I know. I took acting class just so I can get laid.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fucking great. And the girls are crazy.
The only reason to take acting class.
Yeah. It was insane.
And they're crazy.
They're insane.
Their emotions are just pouring out of their face. Yeah. Oh, it's such a turn on.
Yeah. I know. But yeah, they're.
For an hour.
Yeah, they're nuts.
Maybe one Vegas trip. And then you're like, I got to end this. We're not going to survive this.
My first day in acting class, like, I could tell I was going to click with the teacher. I could tell he was like a scumbag, too. In a good way. Like, I could tell
Like, in a good way, Andy.
He's probably trying to bang the actresses in here, too. Yeah, so I had a feeling, we're on the same wavelength. And it was like 9 girls, 3 guys, 1 guy was gay. So it was like 9 girls and 2 guys.
Huge odds.
Yeah, so I remember after the first class, he goes, yeah, all right, next week I'm going to team up at you guys and you guys are going to do a scene together. I'll pick who I'm going to pick, whatever. I just went on like, hey, man, it was a great class. He goes, thanks. I go, hey, man, could you put me in a scene with Christine? Like some, you know, kind of thing where we make out. And he looked at me like that. I'm like, oh, shit, I think I read that wrong. I'm like, oh, man. And next week, Jim and Christine, you do the story, and it was one where we were making out. Yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah, and then, of course, I don't over, you know, oh, we got to get together. We got to get together and do it, you know. It was great.
Did you date her?
Yeah. According to, like, 3 other ones, too. Well, you hook up with them. You go, look, don't tell anyone else in class because it's going to get weird.
You already fished out that class, and then you're like, I got to find a new acting teacher now.
Yeah, but
it's going to get weird because I'm screwing everyone else.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't say anything because then this person might, and then if they do a scene, because, if Rosie knows that we're hooking up, and then I have to do a scene with Rosie, and we have to make out, then she's going to be mad. You know, yes. It's going to. So it's just better if we don't say anything. It was the same rap.
Yeah, it was your monologue.
Just don't say anything, you know.
I don't want to hurt anybody else's feelings, but you're my favorite. Just know that.
Yeah, of course.
But if you and Rosie hook up, let me know. I'd like to be there.
Yeah, a similar thing. In that it's really funny.
Yeah, no, so that was great, and they were wacky and crazy and stuff too. But no, and then I just got to the point. I'm like, I got to settle down. I need some normalcy in my life.
Did you want to have kids?
I didn't for a long time until I hit my 40s.
Age where you're like, and at four, in your late 40s, you're like, I want to have a
46
kid.
46 is when I have my kid. But in my 40s, I realized, you know what? Maybe that's something that's missing. I do want to have a kid.
And?
You know, and then, and then I had mine for 46.
Well, you met a woman.
Yeah.
And were you immediately like, we're going to get married and have kids?
No, it was more of, you know. It was accidental pregnancy.
The saran wrap broke?
I didn't use saran wrap. I was like, I knew saran wrap didn't work.
That's your downfall.
I know. I knew saran wrap didn't work at that point.
So it was an accident.
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't planned, the pregnancy. And then we decided, all right, what do we want to do? And I was like, no, I'm ready. I want to have a kid.
Okay.
I never got a girl pregnant before.
Was she ready to get married? And she was like, all right, let's do this. Everybody was a little hesitant.
Both of us were a little hesitant. We weren't sure. We were dating 8 months.
Oh, jeez. That can be tricky.
Yeah, so we're like, I just said, look, I'm in. I'm 100% in. Let's get married. We'll have the kid, and, you know, it's all going to work out. We're good. Let's make this work. I go, I'm in. And I was like, all right, I'm done. That whole past of, you know, hooking up with girls on the road, all that stuff. And I was pretty much done with that at that point anyway. Right. And I was like, I got a kid on the way. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, once that kid's born, you're like, holy shit, I got to take care of this person.
But you still make your money on the road.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, how does that go? Because I stopped doing the road the first couple of years the babies were born. Was she like, are you seriously you're gone for 5 more days while I'm sitting here with the kid?
Well, I cut back to like 8 days out of the month.
Okay.
So I was out 8 days, and then I would be home for 22. So I was home and full on home. Uh-huh. You know, so it wasn't that bad. If you average it out, the hours, a guy that works 9 to 5 that doesn't get home till 6 o'clock.
Sure.
I was home more. Yeah. I was home more technically than they were. So that's how it worked out. I said, look, I'm going to cut back. I'll do 2 weekends out of town. I'll take 1 or 2 weekends, at least 1 weekend off, and maybe I'll work in New York City, you know, at night on another weekend or whatever. And that's how I did it. So it wasn't that bad.
When the baby was born, what was going through your head? Did it just change everything? Or were you like, yeah, as a kid? Here.
No, absolutely. I mean, first of all, he was born on my birthday.
Is that right?
Yeah, 5 weeks early, born on my birthday. Right. So I already had a special bond to him. You know,
did you watch the birth? Did
yeah, I was the in there. Absolutely.
Did the whole shebang?
Yeah. Kept the foreskin.
Of course. Did you?
Still in my freezer. I did.
Next, to a piece of your wedding cake?
Yeah. That's which, you know, you're supposed to eat after a year for good luck.
How are you?
Yeah.
Ours was there for like 5 years and we finally were like, oh, it's
don't not, get those mixed up.
It's not going to work. Yeah.
No, that's what you're supposed to, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah. After a year, like the 1 year anniversary, you're supposed to eat it for
did
good luck.
Did you eat the cake?
No. But I don't know. I know a lot of guys that got divorced, and I go, dude, what happened? You guys are getting along. We forgot to eat that wedding cake.
We got to eat the wedding cake?
Yeah, after 1 year anniversary, and next thing I know, I was on the couch, and I was out the door.
That's funny. So talk about the first couple of years, because you guys are now separated, divorced.
Divorced, yeah.
Yeah. And,
okay, sorry.
Was it just really hard? Was it overwhelming with the baby? Because my wife and we almost didn't make it. I never had a problem, but she was like, you know, they go through stuff after the birth, and my wife was, you know, had postpartum depression, and she was like, it was hard, screaming at me all the time. She's like, I'm out of here. I go, you're not going anywhere. Just sit down. We fought. Did you guys fight?
Oh, yeah. The first year is brutal.
I mean,
I had, you know, advice from other guys going, look, hang in there the first year. My one friend didn't. He goes that I to this day it's the biggest regret I ever had in my life. He goes, you know, hormones are all over the place,
yeah,
postpartum depression.
Yeah.
But after a year, the first year, it really calms down. No one's getting sleep. You got all of a sudden you got this baby you have to take care of. You have no idea. It's both of your first. He goes, so just hang in there the first year. It's gonna be crazy, but it's gonna get better. So I just knew that, you know. So what we did is we took 2 hour shifts. So when the baby was born, I would watch him for 2 hours. Then she can go to sleep. She can go to the gym. She could do whatever she wants. And then at the 2 hour mark, we'd set alarms. Then she took him for 2 hours. So we did it like that for the first like 4 or 5 months. We give each other breaks. If the baby woke up at 3 a.m, I'd take the night shift. I'm like, right. I got the night shift. Okay, I'll get up at 6 a.m. So I'd sit in front of the TV and I'd rock the baby and put him to sleep, whatever. So we worked out with the 2 hour shifts. We just take turns. But you're so exhausted and it's just crazy.
You're at each other's throats.
You're at each other's throats.
She's angry because she had to give birth and you didn't.
Absolutely. And then if I have to go work and I'm having fun.
She's mad you're leaving. Who are you to leave? And she's trying to call you on the phone and you're like, I was on stage. I couldn't answer.
I remember one time I did Jimmy Kimmel because I had I think it was an album coming out or something like that. And I was on a show and then we went to dinner with my manager and my publicist afterwards. And she got mad. The baby was like 6 months old.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you're great. You're having fun in L.A. going to dinner after a show. I'm like, well, what do you want me to do?
There's nothing else I can do.
Should I just go back to the hotel?
Yeah.
I'll go order room service then. I'll sit in the hotel. I got to eat.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. I go, I don't know what you want. Yeah, you're having fun. That's, yeah, great. I'm home with the baby and you're having dinner with your publicist. And I'm like, yeah, I just, you know, we
were
hungry.
Did she have family with her or was she home alone?
Yeah, no, her mom and dad were around to help. And my mom was around there, my family and stuff.
We
so.
Had no help because we're both East Coasters and we're living out here. And so nobody.
That was a big thing. Like
brutal.
When I was living right outside of New York City, I said, all right, I got to get back in the suburbs. Because we need help, be around some family.
Right.
You know, my mom raised 7 kids. All my sisters have kids and stuff. So they know the deal. Like,
so
no,
you tried the hardest to make it. How long were you guys together? And what finally just you realized
we were together. I don't know. We got, you know, we were married for 2.5 years. We had the baby first and got married when he was, you know, and got married
sure.
when he was like 2, 2.5 or something like that. You know, married 2.5 and, you know, there was some infidelity in there. Relationship.
Oh.
And it wasn't me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What?
So then I'm just
like,
I'm out.
Out of nowhere. Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
So, yeah. And then I just realized,
so
like, I'm
she
not.
She just wasn't ready. She just wasn't ready to make,
probably.
That, make that part of her life.
Yeah, probably. You know.
The boy, that's a
17-year difference in age, too, doesn't help. You know what I mean? That was another thing. I probably should have dated someone closer.
We're 16 years different.
Okay, yeah, mine was 17. Yeah, 17.
We're 16 years different.
Yeah.
That's really funny, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Where is she right now?
Holy shit.
What?
I got to track her phone. Now, here's what I did. I just made sure she had a second kid. Then she's off the market again for another 2 years. Just keep having her have kids, and that's the way to...
That's true. Yeah, I'm glad, you know, that... We only had one because two, me being divorced, it would be brutal. Like, one's tough to take care of.
It is.
My
so you
own.
Guys, you guys split it.
You split it.
It split yeah. the baby 50-50.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it sucks, but it also works great for what you do for a living, because you can travel, do your stuff, and then come home, take the baby.
Yeah, so I, you know, it works for my schedule. Like Thursday morning, he's on the bus to school, and then I get him back on Monday. So it's like I go on a plane. I get on a plane after I put him at the bus stop. That's what I did this week. Got on a plane on Thursday, came out here, and I go back Sunday night. And I get him again on Monday.
Now
so
you're probably a hot commodity, because here's the thing: it's like once you had, you know, you had long hair, and that was cool back in the day. But now having a little boy is really cool for other for women to go, oh, what a great dad! I want to have sex with him.
Not necessarily.
No, not in Jersey.
No, because
so much.
No. Well, you know, because this whole generation of women now are very selfish. It's all about
they want
them.
Their own kids.
No, they want. They like. Wait, why are you going to pay attention to him? What about me?
Really?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What?
Absolutely. Unless you hook up with somebody else that's got two kids and is divorced or something like that, gets it. But
well,
and
he's
most
in
of the girls
school.
That don't have kids, you know, they don't care how old you are, which is, you know, they don't even ask. They don't even right. give a shit. So you hook up with like a 32, 33-year-old, like, wait a minute. I go, yeah, I got my kid tonight. I go, okay, well, why can't I come over? I go, because you can't meet him.
Because he...
I know, I tell him from the beginning, like, I don't want to meet your kids. Please, what do I want to meet your kid for? I, you know, I'm fine
you
with that.
I mean, what, down the road, if you start dating
somebody. Right, I just say, look, he went through a divorce. I don't want to, put, you know, have somebody else around. Like, I don't want to meet him. And then, like, you know... You hook up with them three or four times, and they go, you know, why can't I come over on Tuesday night? I go, because my son's here. So? I go, you can't meet him. I told you that. Oh, I feel like you're hiding me. I go, I am.
I am hiding.
I am. I am.
I'm actually hiding
you. Want
you.
Me to send you a confirmation email? I'll fax something over to you? Yeah, I am. Like, you know, you better chew. You know, so like, you spend too much time with your kid. And I'm like, yeah, I do.
I'm sorry. He's my son.
It's more important.
He's more important than
he's
you.
He's a little more important.
Than you,
yeah.
Right now. Once he kind of goes to school, aren't you meeting, there's usually all the moms, the other moms.
Yeah, but the problem is he's in kindergarten. They're not divorced
they're
yet.
They're not divorced yet.
Yeah.
Give it a
oh,
couple
yeah.
years.
Oh, please. I'm volunteering
By
all the time.
Third grade, you'll be.
Yeah, I know. See, the shit hasn't hit the fan yet. It's too early.
You should start planting seeds. Just go, hey, wait, did I see your husband last past weekend? I was out. No, in the city? No, he was. Oh, maybe it was someone else. And just
I
start.
Think- I think if you up. Advertise your saran wrap technique, you might be in luck.
Well, the problem is, you know, that story has been told before, and it's out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, when a
Everybody's
girl goes
doing
to Google search on me, oh, you're
the saran wrap
You're
guy.
A little too...
I was 18.
Yeah.
Cut me some slack.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, what am I going to do? And it's, you know, to this day, it still hurts that I did that, you know. Every time I eat leftovers, I think about my ex. You know?
All right, let's.
But anyway, so but the single there's no single there's like two, you know. I always look. I just look right at the rings, you know. When I do a lot, you know.
Is it also
I'll go to
because
a school.
You're in suburbia though?
Like, no, no, because no, there's a ton of them are divorced. But the, like I said, the shit will go down when they're like in third or fourth
yeah.
or fifth grade.
They're still hanging
it's,
on.
They're still hanging in yeah. at kindergarten.
Yeah.
So I gotta wait a couple of years.
Wait a couple. You bide your time. Be the friend again for a little while. Be that ear to listen to. That's
start sending
works,
roses.
Right?
No, the roses I'm done with. I got burned enough.
Have you ever bought roses since?
Well, you know, now they have them at the supermarket for like $9.99. I'm like, all right, I don't care. You know, I was making like, you know, $4.50 an hour. So I spent like 80% of my check that week on those two
that
dozen.
Woman's roses.
Yeah, the two dozen, yeah.
That's so awful. That's awful. All right, I ask a couple questions to the end to wrap this up. You, what is something that you hope your son gets from you? Like carries on a skill or a trait or something.
You know, funny. He's already funny. He's already been on stage doing stand up.
He's probably got a deal at Disney already, is my guess. If he's six,
he's six and he
and
plays music.
Stand-up?
Yeah, He got.
What's his big closing joke?
I brought him on stage. He told two jokes, got two applause breaks, and he signed two autographs afterwards. I swear to God.
He didn't come on with a big head at all.
And he's like, Dad, I think I'm going to be on the news. I signed two autographs,
what's
and
his,
I was on stage.
What's his big closer joke?
He's got a lot of shit jokes. Like, it's, you know, I'm like,
did you write his jokes?
No, he did. Like, I just tell him about that experience. You know what I mean? So talk about that on stage. I help him reword. I'm like, you probably should say this first to set it up,
what's
whatever.
The bit
is like, we have a little Yorkie, a little dog. It's a yeah. female, and we have wee wee pads in the house. She goes in the wee wee. He goes, I don't know why they call them wee wee pads, because she doesn't have a wee wee. Like, he threw that in there. He goes, one day we came home from T-ball, and my dad was in his bedroom, and I'm like, Dad, come into the hallway. Hurry up, hurry up. I'm like, all right. He goes, hurry up. I got to show you something. And my dad came around the corner, and I pooped on the pad. He goes, and my dad started, I thought my dad was going to be mad, but he started laughing. He goes, and all of a sudden, the dog came around the corner. He goes, that didn't come out of me. That ain't mine.
That's pretty good for a six-year-old.
I know.
I can't believe you're stealing his material.
And he came up with that tag. That didn't come out of me. That ain't mine. And he got an applause break.
That's an applause break.
And then he had another shit joke, and then he got off stage.
He knows when to get off, too. Yeah, he doesn't even
run
the
light. Well, he wanted to do more because he felt like the adrenaline up there. Yeah. And I'm like, that's it. He goes, that's it? I don't have any more. I go, no, you just had those two. He goes, all right.
Did you got to know when to leave.
Did you tell him that his material was a little sophomoric and really wasn't for your crowd? And,
but I'll give you the Monday late spot.
You can take the late spot after my...
No, but I did. But I tried to bring him on stage like 6 months before. And I said, I'm going to do my show and then I'll bring you on. He goes, okay. And I said, what are you going to say up there? And he goes, I got my jokes in my head. You'll see it when I get up there. I'm like, all right, you're pretty cocky.
Jesus.
I know.
Six years old.
He was five at the time when this happened. I go, oh, you're pretty cocky. All right, fine. And then I did my set. He watched it and I brought him on and he had nothing. And I'm like, give him the mic. Okay, what are your jokes? And he's like, and the bright lights. And he's like, and he started crying. So I said, all right, sorry, there's going to be no jokes tonight, right? So
it was your first gig.
Yeah,
break.
Yeah, so I walk off, we're going back in the green room, and I shut the door, and he's crying. I go, what happened out there? He goes, you stole all my jokes. I swear to God. And I go, what are you talking? He goes, you said everything I was going to say, and I had nothing left to say. And I'm like, what are you talking? He goes, that was my Applebee's joke. I go, what's your Applebee's joke? And then I realize I'm arguing with him like he's a real comic.
That's really funny.
Yeah, I swear to God.
No, I had the Applebee's idea.
And he's like, that Facebook joke. I go, you have a Facebook page? Where's your Facebook page? Because I don't know if you have one. What are you talking about?
I've heard the same story with Robin Williams backstage, too. A comic who was arguing with Williams. You just fucking...
That's really funny.
Yeah, so then I said, you have to have some jokes. So then when I was doing another little, VFW show, was around the corner, my friend was doing it. I said, let's go down. I go on stage tonight. And he went up and he killed. He did two jokes. And
telling his friends, he's like, my dad's a hack. He stole my jokes. Such a thief.
Old man's taking my material.
Busting him out at
an
school.
An asshole.
What's a trait you hope that they don't get from you?
Probably just being a troublemaker like I was when I was younger, acting out.
It seems like your act outs were pretty tame.
Well, we'd get those blockbusters that are even stronger than M80s, and we'd blow up the neighbor's mailboxes. You know what I mean?
Welcome to my neighborhood.
Seems,
I'm not hearing anything that
seems,
freaks me out.
Yeah. I don't know. You got anything worse? He didn't kill anybody.
That's what I was going to say.
No.
Yeah, I killed a guy when I was 17.
When I was in a Catholic school, they got on the mic because they bought these new wrestling mats for gym class, and they were bragging that they cost a lot of money and please take care of them, and I cut them up with a razor blade later that day.
Okay, that's just pure anarchy.
And then it was a big scandal in the school, and then I got thrown out eventually. The last 2 months, I was basically in the principal. They didn't know it was me, but it was me between me and two other guys that were the troublemakers. Yeah. So we're in the office every day.
That joke's less clever than your other ones.
Right,
the mailbox is clever, but that was just pure vandalism.
Just being an asshole.
Right, I know. That was
just being an asshole, I think, is the trait.
And then in high school, the one teacher I didn't like, so me and my buddy, she was out of the room, and her grade book was on the desk, and we ripped it up in shreds and threw it out the window.
Oh, you kind of were a dick.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
no, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your father never lit you up, or you didn't get arrested. No big trouble. You were just at the borderline of
just
trouble.
Just at the borderline. Yeah, because you got away with shit back then. There was no cameras and stuff.
There was
stuff,
no cameras.
So,
kids can't get away with anything anymore.
Yeah, they can't. So, we do all of that stuff. Just, being idiots and stuff like that. So, I wouldn't want them to do that stuff.
Yeah. What's a mantra you would pass on that you've kind of lived your life by?
That's why I was saying about the CCD stuff. We're talking I don't, next year he's going to have to go. He's going to have to go for an hour a week for 8 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's to learn this. It's I could just sum it up in one thing. Would you want someone to do that to you? Then why do that to them? You know what I mean? That's it. That's basically all you need to know. How would you feel if that person did that?
empathy.
That's, you know what I mean? Empathy. Like, you wouldn't like that.
No.
Because he's like, my friend, we were laughing at my friend. Because he, I go, well, you get mad when people go and kids laugh at you. So why would you laugh at him? Yeah. He's like, you're right. So that's what I just teach him. And that's basically all you need to know.
It is hard, though, because as a kid, you blew up some dude's mailbox. It was like, God damn it. Now I got to go put up another mail. And you cut up mats. We all did things as kids. If we could teach kids to be empathetic.
We put a dead fish in the neighbor's like air conditioning unit. So it stunk out the whole house.
That's pretty good. I passed that one up. That's a pretty nice one.
How did you not end up on Jackass? That seems like
I know. We were the original. We were just assholes. You know,
that is funny. Well, listen, dude. Thank you so much for coming on. Obviously, we need to find you another woman, some mom in Jersey who's got a couple kids.
I don't know. You know, do I want the kids and?
Do you want more kids?
No.
You're done.
I took care of that vasectomy.
Oh, did you snippy snip?
Absolutely.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that.
It's phenomenal.
Is it?
Yeah.
No more saran wrap.
No more saran wrap.
I can just see you in a drugstore. I need some saran wrap and some Vaseline.
A couple of rubber bands.
Give the real name now.
You went and just got it snippy snipped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I realized at like 50s when I got divorced or whatever, I'm like, all right, by the time I meet somebody, date her for a few years, get married, have another kid, what am I going to do? I don't want to be I don't want to do that again.
That's where I am, man. I do the math and I'm going to be 68 when my youngest graduates from high school.
Yeah, I'm going to be 64.
Yeah.
I'm going to be 64 when he's 18 years old.
I'm okay with that. 64 is not what it used to be.
No, it's true, and that's a perfect age for me to retire. He's going to go away to college. I'm going to go live down in Florida or wherever I'm going to
do. Fishing and do some crazy
exactly. shit. Exactly. So but you know, you'd rather it be earlier.
Yeah.
You know, all my friends that I grew up with now, their kids are in college now. Their kids are out of the house.
Yeah, but we had a great run for our 30s.
No, I know. I loved it. Absolutely. Yeah, it was phenomenal.
My guest today, they can find you.
My podcast, Comedy Metal Midgets, is up every Monday. It's up on iTunes and jimflorentine.com.
And your Twitter feed?
Is Mr. Jim Florentine.
Mr. Jim Florentine.
Nobody gives a shit about
nobody
that.
Nobody gives a shit about it's that like, anymore. Whatever. Yeah. Dude, I can't thank you for coming on enough. You're going to have to come back because I can listen to crazy stories.
That was great, man. Well, yeah, we could talk about hours.
Because you're one of the few guys I'm in the same boat. Same age, young kids.
Yeah.
It's a little crazy.
Had them laid and all that stuff. And,
yeah. It's good, though. Big thanks to my producer, Andy Lerner, my guest today, Mr. Jim Florentine. And we'll catch you guys next time here on Father Time.